What is up, Dolphin fans? Welcome back to another Dolphin Collective. We got a good one for you guys today. A lot of interesting stuff to talk about, especially, like I said in the intro, Mike Shanahan said something interesting. Not Mike, Kyle. Mike, Kyle. Kyle.
Bob, Terry.
One of them.
Shanahan said something very interesting that we are going to talk about, and obviously talk about, you know, are we underestimated? Which some are, some aren't. And later on in the video, we're going to talk about Prize Picks. Again, use that promo code HMA. You play $5, you get 50 instantly in your lineup. But first, we have to start with, unfortunately, some sad news. Manny Fernandez, unfortunately, passed away today. A Miami Dolphin great. Alan, do you have any cool stories about Manny Fernandez? Our little dictionary encyclopedia over there.
Story.
Also old enough to have actually seen him play. So you should check out, this is a clip, famous clip that's on YouTube. One of the most amazing plays in Dolphin history. Two things I'm going to say about Manny Fernandez. One was that play where it's against Buffalo and it's in the perfect season of 72. And the Bills have O.J. Simpson and Jim Braxton, who was a good running back in his own right, in the backfield. And they're faking the handoff to O.J. Simpson as he comes first. The quarterback pivots, goes to turn around to hand off to Jim Braxton. Bit when he does that, Manny Fernandez already is right there and literally takes the handoff from the quarterback. I mean, it's on Twitter all over the place. You should check it out. The other thing about Manny Fernandez, and I wrote this on Miami Dolphins on SI.com on Tuesday morning. I keep forgetting my days because of Memorial Day. Apologies, but I wrote this on Tuesday morning. If you were to say the best Dolphin player in Super Bowls, that's your guy right there. And I know there's this legend of 17 tackles and Super Bowl VII to cap the perfect season. I actually went line by line in the game book. And then I rewatched the game last year, 2 years ago. And it was like, that's not 17 tackles. Whatever, because I'm a stickler for facts, whatever. But regardless, he spent the afternoon in the Washington backfield. Probably should have been the Super Bowl MVP. And even then, the year before when the Dolphins got spanked by Dallas in their first Super Bowl appearance, had a sack, played very well. The following year, when they beat Minnesota 24-7 to repeat, another big game, another sack. And this will give it, this is for you, TD, hope for the UDFAs. Manny Fernandez was undrafted out of Utah.
Love it, love it.
Proof that all these undrafted free agents can become stars.
There you go. It can happen to any one of them.
Yep, sure can.
Beautiful.
Let's go. Okay. So underestimating. Now, you know, a lot of people, especially Vegas, thinks this team's going to suck.
Do you not think this team is going to suck?
Here he goes. We just started right away.
I do think they're going to surprise people. So I don't think I'm underestimating, because again, the topic is, are we underestimating? People are underestimating what this team can be, especially Vegas. 4.5. I think they'll have more than 4.5 wins. Obviously the half, but I have them again right now before we've seen anything preseason, training camp where it really matters. I have them at about 5-6 wins. But I think they're going to be more competitive than a lot of people think they are. So, you know, I do think people are underestimating them. You know, I don't think they're going to be the first or second pick in the draft, like a lot of people are saying. I think this team is hungry. I think there's a lot of players on this team that are hungry. One-year contract guys that want to prove that they, you know, like Josh Uche, are better than that. Same thing again with the draft picks. You got a lot of guys out there. You got, you know, Proctor, too fat, shouldn't have been taken when he was taken. You got Rodriguez, too short, shouldn't have been taken. You got Kyle Lewis, he went all the way to the fourth round. You got, you know, Caleb Douglas, who I was surprised we took. You know, a lot of guys who heard all this stuff, well, why did the Dolphins take him then, and this and that. So I think this team has a lot to prove. So I think some people are underestimating them, but I don't know if the four of us are. I think one of us is overestimating them.
Well, we don't need to call no names.
That's right. I'm not overestimating them.
Okay. I believe you. I believe you believe that.
The masses
What's your number, TD?
What number? My phone number?
Win number. Win total.
Yeah, I know. High five. Conservatively, I'm going to give us 9. You know,
winning record, okay.
Yeah, if I'm going to be tamper things down, I'll give us 9.
Conservatively, yes.
And aggressively, I give us 11.
Okay.
Yeah, 9 to 11 wins. I think that this is the team to shock the world. I think the masses are underestimating this team. And you know what? Let me be clear about something. Rightfully so. Let me be clear. Let me make sure people understand my stance. Rightfully so, because this is uncharted territory that a lot of us, we've been in, but not like this. Not whenever you have a coach coming in. I know Omar, everybody says this. No, the message is different. The philosophy is different. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but
he's been here longer than me.
No. One thing I can tell you, when I see a coach on the podium for the first time, the verbiage matters. And I know those who are, I would say intellectual, actually think things through versus just coaching the game as if they're playing it too. And I think it's important to let the players do the playing and the coaches to do the coaching and be methodical, be calculated, make sure that they, be smart about everything that they're doing, not about the jerk reaction moment or anything like that. Really have a plan in place. And these guys have talked about a plan. I've seen them execute their plan. Whether you believe in the plan or if it's going to work is irrelevant. But I do know they have a plan and they are actually succeeding at executing their plan. We got to wait to see if it works. Okay. But in the past, man, I've seen guys compromise their plan based off of certain players, certain contracts. They've scratched all that. Omar says it best. They could have kept this person, they could have kept that person. It wouldn't have hurt them to move on from this person from a money standpoint, but they did anyway because they're executing their plan. So this is different for me. I feel like we're going to be headed in the right direction, whether we succeed or fail this year. And for that, we're being underestimated. We can come out the gate and shock everybody. It's happened before. It's rare with teams under these circumstances come out and just like, wow, they put something together that's actually doing well right away. And that's what we're going to do this year. And Malik Willis is the key. And a lot of people's underestimation is because they don't feel he will elevate this team. And when he does, everybody's estimation is going to change.
Super Bowl, of course. Yeah. I don't think Malik Willis is the biggest reason people are underestimating this team is because they have so many unproven players in key spots, and they have so few positions where you look at their talent and you go, yeah, that's top 10, top 12, whatever. Those positions are very few and far between. And the thing is, if you're going to take the glass half full approach, or in the case of some fans, three quarters full or completely full, if you have that Dolphins on your hat, you're basically anticipating that every single solitary question mark, and there are tons of them, is going to provide a positive answer.
Just 70%.
Everything is going to go right and everybody's going to stay healthy.
Correct.
Just 70% of the things.
Those of us who don't have the Dolphin on our hat or don't wear a hat are be more like, based on history, the likelihood is what? If you go 50-50 on the major question marks, which would be a pretty good success ratio right off the bat. And I preface this by saying, I also believe in the plan. Absolutely. I'm with you on that. I just don't think it happens this year. And I think this year is way more likely to be very painful in terms of one loss record than it is to be anything approaching 9 or 11 wins.
Let me ask you a question, Alan. Well, all you guys, let me ask y'all a question. And just indulge the audience, okay, in a hypothetical here, okay?
Go for it.
If the Dolphins picked up Josh Allen in free agency this offseason,
mm-hmm. Okay.
Would we be talking about 4.5 wins with the same roster? Would we be talking about 7 wins with the same roster?
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. 7-7. Yeah.
So, but we were elevated by 3.
Hold on. I think the ceiling is 7 wins. Oh. I think would I put over on 4.5? Absolutely. Factoring in everybody can stay healthy, and even if they didn't stay healthy, it's not like the backups are any lesser players. All of them are unknowns. If Malik Willis comes out and is a top 10 quarterback, that gets you to 7, maybe 8, 9 wins at the best if he's a top 10 quarterback. And that still needs you to have Devon Achane stay healthy, have a wide receiver and a tight end elevate themselves, have an offensive line that has no injuries, and have a defense that shows up, which I don't know what that thing looking like.
That's every team, isn't it?
No.
Their O-line got to stay healthy.
Yeah, but not to this degree, though.
No.
That's the thing. The thing is, the talent base on this team is much lesser than a lot of teams.
There's a huger margin for error on this team. That's bad English, but there's a massive margin for
error. Huger, yes.
Yes, there's a massive margin for error. I mean, you lose, and I hate to say it, knock on your wood, you lose one of your 5 stars, Patrick Paul, I'm not even calling Zach Sealer, Jordan Brooks, Devon Achane. I don't even know if I have 5 stars on this team. Give me another star.
Malik Willis.
No, not fact. Take him out of there. I need another star.
You don't think Malik Willis is a star? That's
why. Move on. We move on to the conversation. We'll talk about healthy Malik Willis.
HM, Jordan Brooks,
star. Oh, you name it, players that we.
Aaron Brooks.
I think we'd be fine. Except the O-line.
Let me finish my point. You lose one of those 5 players, you might as well subtract a win from it. You lose more than one of those 5 players. How many of those 5 players you lose, you better subtract the win from it. So you need everybody to stay. Everybody of significance to stay healthy. Not even battling high ankle sprain, or not even, you know, his back hurting him a little bit. Devon Achane, the shoulder. Mm-mm. Healthy. You healthy with Malik Willis balling. 8, 9 wins. Every single one of those guys get hurt, take a loss off. I mean, take a win off. Just you don't have any margin for error on this team. You don't even have an edge setter now. Do you have a starting safety? Do you have a starting cornerback? Like,
so do you think people
have a starting receiver?
Do you
have a starting tight end?
Omar and Allen, do you think people are underestimating this team, or do you think they're about right with their estimation of this team?
I mean, depends. I mean, what's the estimation? I don't know if it's as catastrophic. For example, I'll use one name: the ESPN prognosticator, fantasy guy Mike Clay. Based on his model, has the Dolphins at 2.5 win. Yeah, I think he's underestimating the Dolphins. The over under is 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
Is that underestimating the Dolphins again? Based on the roster, which is all you have to go by right now. I mean, is it really? Again, it's just so many unproven commodities, and you can't say Caleb Douglas very well may become a very good NFL wide receiver. But until we actually see some evidence of that, it's a projection. It's not like he's a slam dunk draft pick, mm-hmm. because those guys are few and far between, and he was picked in the 3rd round where a lot of the draft gurus had him in the 4th or 5th round. So again, you got to take a leap of faith to say they're going to surpass the expectations. And again, it depends on what kind of hat you're wearing.
I think one element no one talks about that could make or break the shock factor of this team is the actual game plan and how well they get the players to execute it. It's like, again, you got a whole bunch of no names. This is why even back in the Allen will be able to talk on this better, probably the no name defense, you know, the no name like back in the 70s that helped win a Super Bowl that shocked everybody. the scheme and how well you can get those players to execute it, working to their strengths, that's all going to go hand in hand with how great of a coach Halfley is coaching his coaches and those coaches bringing it down. Because if we get that element, I just feel like, and that's the thing, I don't know who Halfley is as a coach taking the reins. That's right. That's the big unknown for me. That's what I want to know. But he could just be a great coach. And if he is,
and if he is what? So what would you say?
Can I correct the record here?
What'd you say?
You heard
me. I didn't hear what you said.
The ball again. TD, let me correct the record. The Dolphins didn't catch anybody by surprise in 72. They went to the Super Bowl in 71. They made the playoffs in 70. And the other part of it, too, is the no-name defense nickname was very cute. Not like they didn't have ballers over there. Bill Stanfield was one of the best pass rushers. You're going to argue with me?
Yeah, I was there, Alan. I was there.
In somebody's womb.
Hey, look it up. They had like four. They had four or five like really high end defensive players, and they were masterfully coached by Bill Ansparger, the architect of this defense. But it's not like they were a collection of stiffs, and all of a sudden the game plan made them great. I mean, come on.
Stiffs, and all of a sudden the game plan made them great.
Yeah. No.
Time will tell. It always does.
Correct.
Let's. I mean. TD talking Super Bowl, which I think is ridiculous conversation.
No. I say that as my desire. Yes, winning record is where I am.
Throw a parade in the streets of South Florida. They have a winning record.
All right.
I think that would be. I mean, that would be with this roster as it stands right now. That would be a major accomplishment. That would be stamped right there. The Dolphins nailed it with that hire of Sullivan and Halfley, and big things are coming.
Mm.
Alan, you want to help me start planning it? I'm just saying. It's
coming. Oh, man. Let's see if I can get this audio going. How did you do it without having it pop up?
I got you.
Do that for me.
Look at you.
Nope.
There we go. I think I got it. All right. So, TD, you found this, right? No, Omar.
No. Yeah.
Omar found this audio clip of looks like Lynch, Shanahan, and who is the third gentleman?
No, we don't know who's having that roundtable discussion, but it's a 49ers roundtable discussion where they're talking about Purdy and the origins of Purdy. And I find it very insightful because, one, it says something that me and Poupard probably discuss all the time. We're in alignment on this part. Quarterbacks who check down in practice when there's no pressure and nobody touching you, you're a punk. And
I never quarterbacks out there, I never use that term. That's him. That's only him.
You're weak sauce.
I know a quarterback who did a lot of checking down at times in practice the last couple of years.
Who? I know you're not talking about that quarterback.
Oh, I know. I'm talking about that quarterback.
We don't know who y'all talking about.
Anyway, you're such a liar. Chad Henne check down.
He did that in games. I mean,
that's why they call them check down Chad. Ryan Tannehill check down in practice. I don't remember. Jay Cutler did not check down.
Nope.
You got Ryan Fitzpatrick did not check down. Nope. You got Chad Pennington did not check down. And don't you dare say Tua Tagovailoa check down, Poupard. Okay. Don't do it.
He didn't check down.
Huh?
He did not check down. He did. I'm sorry.
Okay. But that's how you tell the difference between quarterbacks, like upper echelon quarterbacks and then average guys, in my opinion. When you're throwing what I call big boy passes in practice – and they're completed, even if they aren't completed, who cares? Like, secondary gets some work. If they're completed and people feel challenged, practice is harder, you elevate the level of the team. And from what they were saying, Brock Purdy was doing that from like day one.
And for those who may have forgotten, Dolphin fans should not have forgotten this, but he made his big debut against the Dolphins after Jalen Phillips sacked Jimmy G and knocked him out for the season.
Oh, Jalen Phillips made Brock Purdy.
He did, and if you remember, there was a play in that game. I don't know if you guys recalled where it was like, whoa, 49ers have something. Is he threw like, I don't know, 15-yard completion over the middle as Jalen Phillips was basically tattooing him like right here the second he threw the ball. I was like, man, that's a big boy throw right there. Sorry, go ahead.
So let's take a listen. Are we listening to the whole thing or just bits and pieces?
Yeah, sure. Go home. You're at it. It's not too long.
Let's break it up in two parts. There's a part where Lynch starts talking, so let's stop there and then discuss, and then we can continue after
that. All right. Everyone in the chat, let us know if you can or can't hear this.
When did you guys know that Brock Purdy could be what Brock Purdy is now?
To say what he is now, I mean, now he has been so great. But, I mean, he impressed us the first day he got there. I mean, we really liked him coming out of college. Just going through the whole draft thing that year, you know, he was one of our favorite quarterbacks in the draft. But you go off, you know what people say, you know off your experience of a guy with his height, weight, and speed and stuff, you know where they usually get drafted. And so we gave him a fourth round draft pick. We would have rather taken him in the fourth round than, I don't remember who the guys were, but I believe than any quarterback we would have taken in the first round. It's about that. But it's like, well, why don't you take him in the fourth round? Based off our experience, I don't think he'll get drafted. And we said that, but maybe we will if we're in the seventh, we have an extra one. When he got here, the way he looked with his few reps was so impressive. And we were trying to get Jimmy ready. I mean, sorry, we were trying to get Trey ready. And Jimmy was competing with him to see who went. And I've told this story before, but I remember Jed coming in after a lot of training camp practices and always tell, who's looking better, Jimmy or Trey? And it was a couple of days I was frustrated. And I was just like, I'm just telling you, it's the third guy. It's that guy that, and he's like, what? Who? I'm like, I'm just telling you, it's him. And I remember the first time Brock got in was after we were playing Kansas City. It was Christian McCaffrey's first game. Played like 15 plays. We traded for him that Friday. And we were getting beat pretty bad. So we put Brock in the last drive for some mop-up duty. And he just came in out of nowhere and threw a pick. It was a two-minute drill. Didn't do that good. And I remember I get in the locker room after the game, and Jed's like, well, I saw the guy you thought's the best. That didn't look that good. And I'm like, it didn't. You're right. We'll see. Don't judge him to that. And then a couple weeks later, everyone got hurt. And it's like, hey, we're finally going to see your guy's guy. Is he going to be this good? I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said I liked him for like that. No, I don't know what he's going to do now. And then he won seven games in a row. And it's this. So it's
Kyle's greatest quality. He's got like this.
Right there.
Yeah.
Can I, before we get into the discussion, because I can't help myself, I'm going to call BS on we loved him, we loved him, we loved him, we loved him. You loved him so much. He was the absolute last pick in the draft. Irrelevant. He was your ninth pick, 49ers. He was the ninth quarterback taken. And oh, by the way, that was the year the Dolphins took a quarterback in the seventh round. So you loved him so much, Dolphins could have stolen him from right under you. Instead, they took Skylar Thompson. So spare me the we loved him. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I had to get that off my chest.
They might have loved him.
I needed you to look up who they drafted from the fourth to the seventh round, Poupard. Just so that we can see all of those guys they had to have before they got the guy that they absolutely loved. Because if you loved him and you didn't draft him. And Lynch will address that in this portion of the interview. But yeah.
Okay.
They had Trey Lance, though, right?
They tried to trade Lance second overall. Traded with the Miami Dolphins to go get him.
2021, yeah.
Okay. Fourth round, they took guard Spencer Burford, who's actually become a serviceable NFL player. DB Samuel Womack, that was round five. Round six, a tackle named Nick Zackelj. Round six again, Kalia Davis at DT. Round six again, Tariq Castro Fields, and then Purdy in the seventh round.
So Castro Fields, I bet you most of those guys are not even in the league now.
Correct. So the whole.
But he did say to his defense, he said in his experience, Purdy would go undrafted.
He said
that if you liked him that much, you still took a shot. Yeah. And you had 2 6-round picks.
Absolutely. Like, that makes no damn sense. I do agree with Poupard. And if you like a guy, take him. You didn't like him enough because you had this conviction about Trey Lance that you traded up and gave up resources for to draft him second overall. And, guys, I'm not even sure Trey Lance is in the league right now, third overall.
Is he with the Chargers? Trey Lance still with the Chargers or no?
Is he their backup? He was a free, I thought he was a UFA this offseason.
I could add him to my throwaway quarterbacks. I
mean, there you go. Let me check. He's with the Chargers.
Let's play the other half of the video.
Okay. It's truth serum at all times, even when the owner's there. Like, dude, you don't need to tell him that. But you know what? It's the way we roll. But I will say, look, we did wait. He was Mr. Irrelevant. He was the last pick in the draft. So, but like Kyle said, we did value him. We really did. We had good process with him. We had a lot of conviction. Greasy, I remember. I always talk about Steve Slowick, the scout in that area. He had talked to his college coach, and Matt Campbell was a stud. And Matt said, this guy changed our program. And when a coach talks to you like that, that speaks to you. That he has us competing at Iowa State against Oklahoma. That speaks to you. Then they Zoom with them. It was COVID time, and you know we were still in the scouting where you had to do Zooms. And they Zoom with them, and they get a really good feel. But then I think the most impressive, I remember standing back there with Kyle, there's an old saying, like for guys that are on the fringe of the roster, like don't count your reps, make your reps count. It's a hard thing to do at quarterback. Yeah. If you only have four, it's pretty easy to go through your progression, check it down, and say, okay, I did my job. Not Brock. Brock was coming back, and boom, tight window. We were going, kind of looking at each other, and then we're looking around and see Trent Williams looking at Kittle. Everyone kind of felt it early because he was going out and just playing on instinct and raw ability and just letting it rip, as Kyle says. And it was impressive. He did it right away, and it was noticeable right away. Now, did we know he'd be as good as he would become as early as he? No, we didn't know that. And I think that Miami game, though, showed us right away.
Oh, definitely.
They brought the kitchen sink at him. I'll never forget a throw to Kittle where Brian Flores was the coordinator. He's famous for coming at quarterbacks. He came at him, and he threw a little bang eight to Kittle, and it was like a big-time throw. And it was like, wow.
Okay. That night in bed, to answer your question, sure, that might have been the first time I was like, we might have something special, because I was so sick about – I thought we had such a good team, and we had already – Trey was already on IR. And then Jimmy just broke his ankle, and he was basically going to – I don't know if he went on Jaylen IR.
Phillips dragged him.
Yeah, and I was like – I was, and so I'm home that night, not even thinking about what the game. I'm just like, oh, we're down to our last quarterback. We have such a good team. And I was – and then once I stopped thinking about laying in bed, I'm like, holy shit, he played unbelievable tonight. He's always been good in practice, but, like, what he just came into and some of the stuff that Flores put at him and the way just – the style of what he did was different. And I remember coming to work that Monday just like, we got a shot. And it doesn't look like it, but we might be playing with our best guy now. Yeah. And it showed. We didn't lose a game after that till he tore.
Yeah. That's I love the point that he made about, one, guys not checking it down in practice. And I don't like the point that he made about, you know, your quarterback, so your four reps – they matter. Those guys, those third teamers, they get four reps too. Like, you know, I guess maybe he's talking about if we're running plays, but let's be real, we don't run in practice. Like, who runs in practice? But then the point that he also made was that Trent Williams and Kittle, they were like looking at each other. We're like, hey, yo, dog, you see that? And we've seen that. We've seen that from time and time again, not necessarily with all quarterbacks, but, you know, there's an expectation level. Like, you know, Poupard will say whatever he's going to say. But when you had Tua pre-arm fall off.
I did go with the game.
I'm talking training camp Tua. Didn't we have like a day? You tell me what the number was, when it was an interception-free streak. Don't play like there wasn't last training camp.
Checking down. That's what he was doing.
Umar, let it go, man.
But here's my point. There's an expectation. The ball didn't really hit the ground with Tua. The ball, you weren't seeing errant passes. When we watched the Chicago practice, and there were errant passes everywhere. You'd be like, wait a minute, what's going on here? But that's the standard for Tua now. Mind you, Miami's defense never, ever pressed anybody. Mm. And I think they learned a lesson from that practice. Like, hey, receivers might need to work against press because somebody might press them. But yeah, it's
first practice against Detroit was really rough on the offense too. It was really rough.
Yeah, I never saw that one. But yeah, it was. Yeah, I'm sure it was rougher than Chicago because y'all wrote like it was a beatdown. Chicago,
because there was a beatdown on both sides. That's
yeah. It wasn't a beatdown on both sides against Chicago, but anyway, let's keep not bring that up because the Bears fans, they get all in their feelings when I start telling them that they were absolutely crossing the line in practice.
Over the top. So anyway, but to the point of, because it could Malik Willis be the next Brock Purdy? Why not? And he's somebody who came in actually more, what's the word I'm looking for? More highly touted.
Mm-hmm.
Came into the NFL than Brock Purdy was.
He was projected as a first round pick. Yes, he fell to the third.
Yes, he was until late in the draft process, and all of a sudden it's like
when people watch the film, what I remember about that process, because I whenever somebody like that rises, I'd be like, oh, let me go look. I gotta look. And then I looked at it, I was like, nah, I'm good. And then the real evaluators came in and they were like, yeah, he got a lot of work to do. And it's true. He very undisciplined. I don't think he took a snap under center. He ran like a chicken with his head cut off. Competition level was booty cheeks. And so at Liberty. And he didn't run an NFL-style offense. So it was like strike, 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 strike. I was like, yeah, pretty much third-round pick. And the real evaluators, there's always a difference in the draft process when – the scouts and the draftniks, and they talk amongst themselves, and then they create this vision for what the draft is going to look like. Then the real evaluators come into the process, the GMs who are worried about their team during the season, and maybe they go to a game on Saturday, but they don't know the third round picks in the draft, and the pro personnel people who now get a chance to look at college players and the coaches. When those real evaluators come into the process, they'll be like, no. And then maybe a yes.
But they make mistakes like everybody else.
And that's and they still make mistakes. Absolutely.
John Beck, cough, cough, John Beck.
But he needed development, and he ended up getting it. And one thing that stood out to me is whenever he did mention Kittle, the players like, ooh, it reminds me of that clip last week with Brooks, telling Malik Willis, ooh, man, that was nice. You got me on that one. You like, hey, man, we heading in the right direction. We already got the all pros.
Man, that was a nice pass. He gave me my contract extension.
hey, why not? But also, it amazes me, though, the players that I feel like there are a lot of great players in this NFL. It's just a matter of do you get your shot or when you get your shot. And in that moment, are you ready for that shot? And Purdy took advantage of it. And Malik got to be ready for this opportunity right here.
Joe Blanco 5, I see you in the chat. People don't think I don't see you. He's saying, oh, Malik Willis should compare to Steve McNair. Woo, sir. That is very irresponsible because I was a young man. When Steve McNair was at Alcorn State, I remember we followed the Miami Herald at that time used to follow Steve McNair and write up stuff about Steve McNair every single week because he was that prospect. Steve McNair had cannon for an arm, had size, had mobility. He was in college, he was that dude. He was like Dante Culpepper was at UCF. So there is no comparison about Malik Willis and Steve McNair. Not on the college
level. Not coming out of college. No.
Not coming out of college. But McNair was hyped as a first round pick. I mean, he got beat out by Bo Nix at Auburn. Transferred. He should have transferred.
You know, the one thing I do like about Brock Purdy, and he was on a podcast, I think it was this year. It was like earlier this year, Built for More. He was talking about his play style. And one of the things I liked about, he's 6'1", and he was talking about how he can't see over the offensive line and he had to have timing. And he literally said, he has to focus on timing and he has to trust that his receivers will be in the correct spot because he can't see that they'll be there. So, you know, a lot of his throws are him trusting them that they'll be in the right spot.
Same for all 6'1 quarterbacks, and Malik Willis is 6'1, by the way.
You know, successful quarterback. And, you know,
Malik say he can see over the line. Just
Malik is a liar.
Or he can buy himself some time by rolling out because he has the mobility to escape.
But I just like that he talks about having that trust with his receivers that, you know, they'll be in the right spot so he can, you know, throw the ball there because he can't see over his offensive line. And it just shows, you know,
that if you go to Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, I did a ton of research on this. None of them can see over the offensive line. If you've ever stood, like, an offensive lineman is like the size of TD. Size of Doug. Doug is huge. If you've never seen Doug, Doug is huge.
Appreciate
as much as Doug could crouch over, you're not seeing the field. You're finding alleys and passing lanes, and they create those alleys for you to see. But it's a lot of trust to where your receivers are supposed to be. Last year, and not to make any excuses, because there is no room for any excuses. I said his arm died. You know I said his arm died.
No,
follow up. Were we in Spain talking about his arm dying after a win?
Omar, I don't think it was his arm that died, actually. I think it was his hip.
Impacted the torque of the arm.
Yes. I think that's what did. Well, we'll see. We'll see this year in Atlanta. Wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, wish him the best of luck. But, like, it was 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I was talking to y'all about, like, it was, yeah, we did a podcast. I was in Spain and I could not believe how bad he played. Mm. Like, could not move.
But he was 1-0, and that's all that matters for a starting quarterback, Omar. You've said that many times. He was 1-0 that game.
Okay, but that was the beginning of the end. That was like, Omar. I think he got one good quality win after that.
That wasn't the beginning.
You couldn't believe it, Omar. You couldn't believe it.
New Orleans. Was the beginning. Yeah, he got like a New Orleans quality win, but it, you know, then the next one was the Jets. Come on.
Did you say New Orleans quality win, really?
Yeah, I mean, he looked like himself. But I mean, if you read the tea leaves the whole season, the whole throw the ball because it's throw the ball downfield because it's like a punt, like what? Like
yeah,
like if you the no hurry up offense against the Steelers, come on. If you read the tea leaves, they clearly knew that he couldn't throw the ball. And when the league knew without any doubt or conviction to it, it was like, it's a wrap. Like, you can't.
We weren't even throwing a 40-yard comeback no more, so it was over. At that point, it was just done.
You could tell, again, we're talking about a certain someone's not here anymore, but you could tell on his deep throws compared to, like, 2023, and this is why, you know, me and TD bring up a lot about the hip, is when he would throw it deep, he started arcing his back again, where he would kind of just get it. I got to get it up. Whereas if you go back and watch the 2023 tape, it was more the hit, and he would like the pass against the Cowboys where he hit Waddle down the sideline on like the 2-3 yard line. He didn't arc his back on that throw. It was a nice throw. Whereas 2024,
he was sacrificing mechanics. He started sacrificing mechanics to try to get it down.
I got to push the ball down
as far as he could, and that just not good.
John Breck broke him. His last, he threw a deep pass against Carolina, which y'all know I keep bringing up because they lost after that. Then I think he threw a deep pass against the Chargers as well for a touchdown. It was like literally 40 yards. Waddle caught it in the end zone.
That was Buffalo. He had one against Buffalo.
Buffalo at home?
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. But, yeah, okay, so that means Carolina was probably the last deep pass he really threw. Mm. Like, it's, you know, outside of the punts that he was supposed to, you know, throw. Okay,
by the way, if we're really going with he couldn't throw the ball anymore, then it's coaching malpractice that kept him in the starting lineup.
1,000%.
Absolutely. 1,000%. No question.
Mike's job was depending on Tua's success from jump.
What were you going to do otherwise?
You had to keep him in. I mean, you banked everything on him.
What are their options?
Again, because I'm not buying the BS narrative of the arm that fell off or the arm died. I'm not buying it. Okay. You with me?
Okay, but then explain to me, and I know we would see him struggle at times in hurry up situations at practice. I own that. We will watch periods. Probably, I remember a specific anytime we went inside the bubble to run a hurry up offense because that was when they would do it during training camp because they didn't want y'all to see it. It was not good because the defenders would sit on his passes and it was a third down. They knew what he was going to do and they were going to force him to throw it out and then they were going to jump it. I believe like one of the cornerbacks like tore his ACL on like one of those practices. Poupard will tell you his name in a minute. Yeah, last year was it Artie Burns?
Dude, he was stretching in warm up.
No, it was the guy that was starting, and then he got hurt. He didn't make the team, but he's added back to the practice squad last year, and then he got cut again. I forget what his name is.
Kendall Sheffield, is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You gotta explain. Sorry,
we're talking about Tua again. These guys started it.
I'm done.
It's because of the Purdy comparison and the 6'1" spot.
It's 6'1" quarterbacks can't see over the line. Sorry, 6'2".
Oh, that's where we were. Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
Malik's a liar because he say he can. I believe Malik. Okay, just for the
record. Malik said he can see over the offensive line.
Yeah, they asked him a question. He was like, I can see over it just fine. I'm in no problem. Oh, my God. You see the clip?
He can see
over the line. He gets back there and he's looking.
He's not like Tua. He knows how to lie.
Oh, my
God. A 6'1" guy can see over a 6'3" center.
When you have a shorter center, it makes things
it does
easier. So I don't understand what our – yeah.
Yeah, so he can see the left side of his line.
And he also moves a lot. Hours. He also shifts in the pocket. Yes. He shifts the windows very well in the pocket.
Where he can see where the ball is going.
Yeah, go watch his film, Doug, and watch how he subtly can move to the left and right that half a step in lanes and stuff.
He's looking through the lanes of the offensive line to see where he can put the ball. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
but he can't see over the offensive line.
You can see over because he don't spot throw. Malik don't spot throw. He actually sees it and fires it. He don't just let me just throw it. You know, he can see it.
Okay, Mark.
Spot throws.
I'm trying to be.
You look like you're in pain over there.
I don't know.
I am so trying to be.
if you're 6'1" and you're standing behind that offensive line, you spot throwing.
Malik also gets depth in the O line too. Just FYI,
Let's move on from this conversation.
I know, right, man?
Like, let's move on from the
conversation. We have some price picks to talk about. TD, there you go.
Yes, sir. I got me a. Hey, listen. I know y'all been watching these NBA games. There's some crazy stuff going on in the NBA. Let me see. I don't know.
There we go.
Listen, man. I got some action on tonight. You know, you still got a series of two teams trying to make it to the championship. As the Knicks have punched their card, but if you go on Prize Picks, you could play $5 and get $50 instantly using code HMA. And right now, I have my ticket in. I got Alex Caruso at 8.5. He always, you know, in that 11-13 range. De'Aaron Fox, man. Sometimes he burns me. Sometimes he doesn't. This is a big time game, man. I think he's gonna show up finally. Shea, obviously, this is like the normal 29.5. He probably put up 33. And Victor, man, I ain't gonna lie, man. This is the next big star in the NBA. I got him over 19.5. That's safe. It's Taco Tuesday on his, so they give you a little break on that. I like this ticket. I think I'm gonna hit on it. I'm gonna let y'all know tomorrow. So if you want to tell this, make sure you go over to Prize Picks, find me, and you can see everything I put in. And get into the action, but make sure that you play responsibly. All right. Supporting our sponsors is supporting the channel.
I don't know if you guys watched that clip that I put in our text chat, the TikTok clip, but yo, Alexander, what is going on with that dude? You guys ever watch Martin back in the day? You ever see the clip where he was playing basketball and he did that flop and they were like, they didn't even touch you? And he was like, what is going, how is he getting away with, like, OKC, man? The I'm sorry.
Too, man, Jesus. It's
I don't watch basketball. And normally when I watch with, good.
Wait. No, the NBA always looks for the next star in the league, and it's going to be Wimby, but Shea is messing himself up by doing this because you don't want to be known for that. And every shot you take, you show some type of flop. And in real basketball, people know the amount of times you get to the free throw line, you could take 6 points a game off if he wasn't flopping. And that's not an MVP. And that's the problem for him right now. So, hey, the league got to do something about it. They're proposing really, you know, bringing back, you know, like sanctions and things like that for doing it. But that's crazy.
I thought they had penalties and fines. And
they removed it. They did. It's crazy. They had it, then they removed it.
Okay. Normally, I don't watch, but I haven't watched basketball since Jordan was with the Bulls. That's how long ago I've watched basketball. But a lot of times I like to root.
You didn't watch the Heatles?
No. Well, I did when LeBron was on there, because that's the point I'm about to make. When a team is like an underdog or they get hated on, and I'm like, all right, why are you hating on them? I'm like, let me root for them. So like when LeBron was on the Heat, I rooted for the Heat because I was like, they're getting unnecessary hate because the dream team, every team does this.
It's a super team.
Yeah. But every team does that, you know? Well, tries to anyway. But like when there's a team like OKC, if they make it to the championship, I'm rooting against them because the flopping, I can't stand. And like LeBron, I rooted for LeBron when he was with the Heat because he was getting unnecessary heat. But that man also, people want to compare him to Jordan. That man flops.
Yeah, let's not do that. Not even close to Jordan, but go ahead.
Anyway, flops. Bad. But anyway, let's not talk about
Showtime Lakers, baby. It's why I'm wearing yellow.
you a Lakers fan, Alan?
I was back in the day. I'm like Doug. I don't follow basketball. I just see the social media posts and I see what OKC's doing, and it's annoying the crap out of me. That gives me no desire to bother watching.
Watch it, yeah.
So last thing we're gonna talk about, and then we'll get to the donations real quick. Contingency for success or failure. I had a lot of people ask me, and I'm going to ask you guys this question, and I think it's a very obvious question. I've had people on my channel ask me, at any point, do you guys see them pulling Malik this year? I said no. I said they need to see him in the Bevin flows. So if he does do bad, they have to be able to see him come out of the bad and continue doing well. And I've also heard if the Dolphins go 0-17, will Halfley get fired? And I said no. I said they kind of are expecting them to be bad. I said, but he will be, they'll be, the question will be there, but it won't be happening more or less than if it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Get it, Omar.
I think that the only way Halfley gets fired this season, if players have concluded, not that these players are important because most of them aren't. I mean, that's why they strip the team of leaders and people who know the NFL culture and whatever. It's just a rookies and minimum guys. If the players conclude this guy's a moron, like Cam Cameron, when Joey Porter like stepped up in the locker room, was like, you don't know what the hell you're doing, and it was over. Like once player, and that's like, people don't understand why Brian Flores had to replace what's that whack quarterback that they traded, Josh Rosen. I'm sorry, people that I don't remember names. Wow. There's a lot of them that comes through in and out. When he started Josh Rosen, I don't even think it was his choice. And then he literally was losing his locker room by continuing to play Josh Rosen. He had to go back to
which was the right move.
Which were, and he had to go right to Ryan Fitzpatrick.
No, he should have stayed with Josh Rosen.
And lose your locker room and lose confidence from your players.
Yes, because
he wasn't tanking. That man fought me for like 2 hours.
He should have stayed with Josh Rosen and got Joe Burrow.
Never had a conversation about tanking. We had no intentions of tanking. If they even brought up the conversation about tanking, I wouldn't have chose his job. He was not tanking.
Dude, he almost bit our head off of that. I don't remember who it was. We asked him about tanking, and he was pissed.
He was not tanking.
No, I know that, but that would have been the right play was, and you had the perfect excuse. The Dolphins traded a second and a fifth round pick for Josh Rosen. We need to see what we have.
Yeah, but when your team knows you suck.
I understand that, but it would have been beneficial.
It was the same thing like playing John Beck. Like, the team knew he sucked. Like, you can't do that.
Let me go back to the original question. I hate to agree with Omar, but I have to. Yes, it would require something to where it would become very, very obvious Jeff Hafley's over his skis as an NFL head coach, and there has been zero sign whatsoever that that's even a concern. Just like
we haven't played a game yet. Calm down.
Again, based on what we've seen and observed so far,
we haven't even put on
pads. I am aware of that.
Calm down.
Let me ask you guys this question real quick. Cam Cameron at this point, Hafley at this point. There was a difference, right?
Yeah.
Gotta turn those thumbs up this way.
Yeah. Cameron always came off like a moron. Am I lying, Poupart?
I don't know if I put in those terms, but he didn't inspire nearly as much confidence as Hafley has inspired so far, having not played a game.
Here's Cam Cameron's famous quote, and you could probably find it 100 times in his interviews. I would love to answer that question, but at this moment, I can't. That was the answer 4 or 5 times a day.
Not only that, and anyway, thank you. That's a great question.
A great question. I
appreciate you asking it. But
I appreciate you asking me. Yeah. I wish I could answer it, but I can't.
I'll have to get back to you on it.
I think we have, though. Oh, go ahead.
That guy was probably the most. I haven't covered many incompetent people, but he is right at the Mount Rushmore of incompetent people.
Wow, I think with Jeff Hafley, John Eric Sullivan will show us who he is as a GM. If we have a bad season, right? Like, so say we win one game or no games. I think one of the things that tell you if you gotta whether you should ignore it with the coach because he's new with not a lot of talent or take it serious is looking at the discipline of the team. Was this a highly penalized team? Regardless of being young, a great coach has discipline on the team. Flores had it early with that team, how they finished the year. They were very disciplined. We didn't have those penalties like that. Like, you know what I mean? Those teams that literally can rack up a lot of penalties every game. How disciplined do you have them? The false starts, I'm not talking about like the, and then it's not even the end game play, like a pass interference or nothing. I'm talking about the false starts, illegal formation, you know, all of that type of stuff. Do you have the structure together where these guys are moving in and out of what they need to do properly and not letting that beat you as well? And I think that goes a long way with a new coach.
I covered some of the greatest Hurricane and Florida State teams in the history of college athletics, and they were usually the most penalized teams. I don't know what the NFL's statistics are like. But
those are great teams, though, right, Omar? They were great teams.
Great teams are usually
penalized. Yeah, I'm talking about stripped down roster. You know, you're starting over fresh.
It's cool to be not penalized because you're not doing complicated stuff because you don't have the talent to do complicated stuff. Flores.
Well, I've seen it might make
that Flores, that 2019 team, yeah, they weren't penalized. They also sucked. And like,
but that's the point. A lot of sucky teams get penalized a lot.
I don't care.
Holding on for dear life. I mean,
make plays. I don't care if you get penalized. Make plays.
Mike McDaniel started out his career and his team was getting penalized and it was hurting us.
Shout out to Alula. Remember, for 4 months, said Omar can't wait to see Tua throw a fade touchdown to London. Mal said, all I want from Malik Willis is to do something I haven't seen from the quarterback position since Marino's 95 season. Don't lose the Dolphins the game.
All quarterbacks, it's coming. All quarterbacks are going to lose the Dolphins games. Name one that didn't. Marino lost Dolphins games, didn't he?
Malik Willis didn't.
Or Poupard. Marino didn't lose Dolphins.
They all do at some point. It's a matter of degree.
Chip said the roster is scary thin. Yeah.
I don't even think
speaking scary of scary also, thin.
There's also not a lot of top in town. That's not
the. No.
Yeah, I don't even think scary thin is the right description to it. It's got no top end talent
that we know of.
It's not deep. It can't handle injuries. I wrote a column in the Miami Herald, following through with something that I said on this channel, which is I could literally put together a team of unemployed NFL players that would beat the snot out of this Dolphins team. I stand on that. I have put the team together, wrote a column about it to make the point of you're going to get $20.2 million back. Yes, I know some of that goes to the rookie class, but you will have the opportunity to sign 2 to 3 veterans that could really help this team would immediately become starters. People like Rasul Douglas, people like AJ Epinesa, people like Christian Wilkins. Those guys would help you win games. Now, if our goal is to not win games, cool.
Whoa, it's not one or the other. The goal is to win games while also establishing the foundation and then preparing for next year. It's not one or the other. You're making it sound like it's either you want to win games.
Who says you can't do that with those guys on your team and still help you win games? Who is Rasul Douglas a progress stopper for?
Read MiamiDolphinsOnSI.com and you will get all the answers to those questions because I wrote a column saying why the Dolphins should not go that route.
Really, Alan?
Yes.
Man, I'm with Omar on this one. Bring those three guys and a veteran receiver. And this
First of all, what makes you think we agreed that you wouldn't sign either Rasul Douglas or Christian Wilkins or whatever name you want to more than a 1 year contract? We all agreed on that.
No, I would sign him to more than a 1 year contract. Okay.
I'll give him
4 years on that deal.
All they've done is set themselves up. Everybody signed their 1 year contract. Pardon me.
Okay, so how much cap space they got?
Right now.
For 2027,
I think
100 million. If you take out the
130 million.
Let me borrow 10 of that for this season.
They also have like 34 players on their contract. Anyway, my point is, if you're one of those guys, we're going to assume they're going to have options. Why in the hell would they want to join the Dolphins? That's number one. And then B, the flip side is yes, progress stoppers. Do you want Jonnu Smith back, or would you rather take a good look at Greg Dulcich?
I can take a good look at Greg Dulcich while having Jonnu Smith here.
Sure, that's going to play well.
Did I not take a good look at Greg Dulcich while I had Darren Waller here?
Not when Waller was healthy, would Waller miss a lot of time?
I mean, injuries happen, and you use two tight end sets plenty.
Okay, then if Dulcich gets hurt, then you make a phone call to Jonnu Smith. Other than that,
he'll be employed by somebody by then.
Maybe.
Man, bring Christian Wilkins back.
So I'm putting Pepper back together. What you got against that? It was going to be a progress stopper for Kenneth Grant or Jordan Phillips?
Yes.
Who cares? We saw them last year. They were the sixth worst run defense in NFL.
If you think that's your ceiling for Kenneth Grant, that we've seen all there is to see, then there's a problem.
Okay.
But if you can bring Christian Wilkins back, I'm like Kenneth Grant can go in that rotation whenever he gets opportunities and he get approved and knows. You mean
Christian Wilkins is going to be back to the guy he was and he's not going to be cheap?
I don't care.
What should he have lost though?
I give Christian Wilkins $5 million right now. Right now. Let's do it. Let's roll.
I give him 10.
Come on.
Listen, Steve. That changes everything. If I know I'm going to the season stopping the run.
Huh? I mean, I understand your thought process, TD. We're gonna have to stretch that 10 out a little bit. Like we're gonna have to give him.
I'm just saying that. But that would be nice to have a Christian Wilkins on this roster right now, solidifying the middle. And obviously, we got issues at edge, but now we can really be way more creative. Like, that would be massive. Like, bring Christian Wilkins back on a discount. Oh, that's you got me happy.
Discount, dude. Seriously, Christian Wilkins, who scratches it.
He ain't getting 30 million. He ain't going nowhere and getting 30 million.
He's not getting 8 million.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying by discount.
JT Tillman says, Devon said he doesn't have time for a rebuild. Win now.
That's right. That's right. The boys know.
Shouldn't have signed that contract then.
Yeah, exactly. Juan with the tenor said, TD, I get you're excited, but be realistic, bro. This team won't be competitive until next season.
Says you.
TD doesn't do realistic.
I live in realistic. Okay.
Altarion with the tenor said, I think we are being unfair if our prediction in our predictions when we consider that we've had what we've had in the past. If Halfley gets this defense right, I think our offense can be better than the previous year. 9 wins minimum.
Sure. This guy can know the ball.
10, been a member for a year. Shout out to you. Will Omar crush break out this year?
Who's my crush?
Don't you denounce.
Who do I have a crush on?
Who's his crush? I mean,
love of your life? Love your life that moved to Atlanta? Move to Atlanta?
Nah. Come on. I turned on him at the end of the season. Come on. Stop it. You know I did. TD, come on. Tell the truth.
Oh, why are you still holding out?
The first press conference.
Throw him in punches.
We're never the same from that. Stop.
Omar tried to double back. And I tell y'all, I don't never double back, boy.
Solo headbutt.
Sometimes the double back is good. Sometimes you miss that old thing. Not TD.
Can you stop letting TD hit Rocky?
Sometimes I gotta circle back a little bit.
Solo headbutt said, "Can you stop letting TD hit Rocky? Ricky's a bong before coming on the show. This is a rebuild year. The teams that rebuild don't win games. 3 wins at best. I don't think 3 wins at best. I think it's gonna be hard.
I thought about something. There was a team, but." The Bowl Dable's Giants in 2022. That team was rebuilding. They didn't expect the quarterback to be as good as he was. And they went to the playoffs with a
Was that the Daniel Jones that got on a contract year?
Yes, that was the year that he got a contract. So I mean, Malik Willis, if he has that kind of season, I'll look up those numbers to find out.
And that season, no, it wasn't even all. I think he had like 20 touchdowns. It wasn't even in 11 picks. It wasn't even like crazy great that year for Daniel Jones. Solid.
Look at Indianapolis. Nobody expected them to be good as they were, but they had consistent quarterback play. You get consistent quarterback play, you got yourself a chance.
Yeah.
Keys on My Mind said Pat Mahomes is 6'1.5" at 220. I get the concern, but let's acknowledge it's not a death sentence and innocent until proven guilty.
The difference is, can you move with that height too? All these short guys that can move out of the pocket, improvise. A lot of their throws go off the run. You know, they're improvising, they're extending plays. But the statues in the pocket that's 6'1", it's tough.
Yeah, most of the people who follow me know I do not like athletic quarterbacks for this exact reason. When you move out the pocket, you put yourself at risk of injury. When you're injured, you'll become like, I knew it was going to happen to Lamar Jackson eventually. And you saw what happened to Lamar Jackson last season. We'll see if he can rebound from that. It hasn't happened to Josh Allen. You know, he's built like a brick house.
Yeah.
But it happens to Cam Newton, who is also built like a brick house. You have to learn to be a traditional pocket quarterback. And if Malik Willis wants to come out here and run like a chicken with his head cut off, cool, but it ain't going to last very long.
Except other than Stafford, who now basically doesn't scramble on a regular basis.
Purdy doesn't scramble.
He was he does scramble, and second of all, he missed what, 5 or 6 games last year.
Goff does not scramble. You're right, he does scramble. I mean, I'm not saying that you don't have to like, I'm not saying you have to be a traditional Patrick.
Don't Mahomes make it your identity.
Pocket quarterback.
Yeah, don't make he running will your identity.
Scramble.
Except Patrick Mahomes makes more of his plays off script than he does on script.
In select moments, fourth quarter, third down.
He makes a lot of crap happen.
That's his game. I'm telling you, you take that away from Patrick Mahomes, he's looking like two around here.
That was the Super Bowl against the Eagles. They took it away. Greg with the tenor said, I understand that generally speaking, we aren't expecting a good season record-wise, but if Malik Willis performs at an elite level, the sky's the limit. Crazier things have happened.
Name the last quarterback who becomes a first-year starter and plays at an elite level.
Malik Willis.
I thought Papar was going to name the quarterback.
Who?
Name the quarterback. Any quarterback that's come out and been a first-year starter and played at an elite level.
Oh,
Malik Willis.
Saeed, been a member for 12 months. He said, every day I'm more convinced we could do something.
That's because TD's getting to you.
Cody said, I ain't gonna lie, I cannot wait for this season to start. Because when we start racking these wins up, I am going to be unapologetic every week we come on here. We're going to whack these wins up. Y'all going to see.
Cody said, Waddle said he don't see wide receivers on the roster that could get 20 yards versus PS2 per Achan. If you don't know, Achan was back on Tron Armstead's channel. Very good conversation, I think.
After
the contract. Mm-hmm. He talked about, you know, the whole process, and, you know, he said from jump, Sullivan and Halfley made it known that he wasn't going anywhere, so he wasn't worried about getting that contract. That was like the first five, 10 minutes, and then I was like, I want to react to the rest of this, so I'm not going to watch it anymore. But yeah, it was a good conversation.
He also kind of suggested that he wasn't practicing because he didn't have his extension.
Yes. He said that his people were like, no.
Yeah.
Don't go out there. And he wanted to because he was itching, but they said, not till we get the contract, you are not going out there. So he was like, all right.
And by the way, the Waddle comment about no Dolphin receiver get 20 yards against Pat Surtain too. Yeah, Waddle now is teammates with Pat Surtain, so of course he's going to pump his tires. Mm-hmm.
Means, he would have probably said the same thing about Waddle.
Waddle roll no ball.
Mr. Ed for the win said that MJ didn't flop takes are horrible. You don't have to flop when you get SGA calls. MJ got calls like SGA. Bron getting the worst whistle.
Cap.
And then finally, Ted with the tour said, Ethan Bonner isn't Omar's secret crush.
No, he's Joe Shad. He's Joe Shad's secret crush.
But we're going to get out of here. I got to go do some work and sign some contracts. Go check out Omar. And nothing big, just personal stuff. Go check out Omar Kelly on Miami Herald. Alan Poupart, Miami Dolphins on SI. TDYouTube.com/TDFinsTalk and Roundtable Sports. And myself on YouTube.com/WWRong. The boys will see you Wednesday night because they will be at OTAs tomorrow, not Wednesday night, tomorrow, which technically is Wednesday night. And then you guys will see me again Friday morning. But we are out, Cub Scout. Peace.